Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So Serie A is finally almost upon us. The first matches of the season are going to start in the upcoming weekend. We're recording this on Monday morning. So we are going to continue to cover Serie A teams. On Friday, we talked about Roma. Today, we are going to cover Fiorentina with Giancarlo Rinaldi. We are going to talk about both Milan and Inter with our friend Richard Hall. But because we still have transfers in Serie A until September 2nd, we are still going to spend a good amount of time talking about transfers. And we are going to start at the top with the two big developments recently. So on Friday afternoon, we had Dzeko extending his contract with Roma, which came out a little bit out of the blue. And then we had Alexis Sanchez is on the verge of joining Inter. So we're going to discuss this with our good friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. His Byline podcast and videos on Chelsea and the Premier League are absolutely blowing up. But Alex, let's go back to Serie A, and I want to ask you about Dzeko's extension. It seemed the most likely alternative to this was signing Gonzalo Higuain from Juventus. So in your opinion, what was better for Roma, keeping Dzeko, or should they have moved him and gone all in for Higuain?
Yeah, David, it's an interesting one, and I myself was just thinking the whole time, Dzeko will not be at Roma next season. I, of course, like many, were assuming Inter, but I definitely was not thinking Dzeko would be back in Roma colors. But honestly, if we're comparing Dzeko and Higuain, they're probably better off with Edin Dzeko. I mean, he already knows the team. He already has a relationship there. I can't use the thing that I always use where he knows the league and the other player doesn't, because obviously Gonzalo Higuain also knows Serie A quite well. But there still is more familiarity with Dzeko in Roma than there is with Higuain in Roma. And the age difference is really not that much. Dzeko's 33, Higuain's 31. But at that point, especially seeing Higuain lately, and I'm not judging it all off his stint with Chelsea, I would say they're more or less the same age in footballing terms. I think when you're comparing a 31-year-old and a 33-year-old, it's a little bit of a wash, unless the play between the two is dramatically different, and it's really not at this point. So I think just knowing what you have in Edin Dzeko and with Higuain, it just seems like he's so much of a question mark at the moment. I mean, his stint with Milan was certainly interesting. His stint with Chelsea was rather disappointing. And at Juventus, it just doesn't seem like it'll be like the days before when he was at Juve. So I just think there's probably more risk in acquiring Gonzalo Higuain. So I know everything didn't necessarily pan out the way teams or you and everybody who covers transfers thought it would regarding Edin Dzeko. But I think at the end of the day, Dzeko is the safer bet over Gonzalo Higuain. And I promise to anybody listening, I'm really not saying that because of his stint at Chelsea. I don't think it was a complete failure for El Pepita at Chelsea. But obviously, he isn't the same Higuain that you remember from the Napoli days and even the Juve days. And I just think that Edin Dzeko, he'll still give you a nice shift. You just cannot expect what you used to expect out of Dzeko, but the same goes for Higuain. So I'm going to say that this was probably the right decision for Roma. So, David, I guess the natural next question, the follow-up question to this would be, there's always a domino effect when someone moves or stays. So what are the domino effects here of Dzeko staying at Roma?
This one actually really has a lot of layers. This deal impacts multiple teams and multiple players. So we mentioned Higuain was a possibility for Roma. And I think Juve sporting director Fabio Paratici, when he looked at the striker carousel, I think in a lot of ways the best outcome for him would have been Dzeko going to Inter, Higuain going to Roma to replace him, and then Juve landing Icardi. Now, with Higuain's contract off the books at Juve, that would have given Paratici a little bit more flexibility with what to do with Dybala, who's been on fire during the preseason. But now with Higuain having no logical destination, and at this point, I think it's much more likely that he stays at Juve than leaves, it really puts Juve in a tough spot with Dybala. Because keeping Higuain, you have humongous wages, about $16 million before taxes. You have a big amortized value, around $30 million that counts on the books. If he stays, that really almost pretty much forces you to sell Dybala. And I think PSG, who is the most likely destination, would also know the situation that Juve is in. Ironically, Leonardo is the one running PSG's market. He's the one that took Higuain off their hands last year. So I definitely think it has an impact on Juve there as well. On Roma, look, you know, I think Zeko is 33. Higuain is about a year and a half younger. But I think, you know, you look at Gonzalo Higuain's performances, they in a lot of ways feel like the same age. Now, Zeko on a three-year deal at big wages at 33, coming off a season where he scored just 9 goals. Maybe not a great deal either, but I think overall that makes sense over Higuain. This also impacts Icardi, who now has one less team to go to. Now it really leaves just Juve and Napoli. Monaco have made an offer, but I don't see that as a realistic destination for him. So it has an impact on him. And also finally on Inter, who in an ideal world, they would have had both Lukaku and Zeko. But in my opinion, it's not a big loss because I'm a big Lautaro Martinez guy. I think him and Lukaku are going to be a great duo. Esposito played well during the summer friendlies. They have Politano who can play as a second striker. But this brings Alexis Sanchez much closer to Inter because Zeko's no longer an option. He could be taking a medical with Inter as soon as tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday. So let me ask you, Alex, financially not a big exposure for Inter because Man United are paying a good part of his salary. They get him on loan with an option to buy. But what type of player do you think Inter get? You know, he has played in Serie A. Conte likes him. You know, obviously, though, he's coming off a very difficult stretch. So what do you make of this deal for Inter?
Well, it's interesting because he's just such a forgotten player, especially within the Premier League circle. Now, it feels like he hasn't played at all in recent years, and I guess that just is because when he was, especially an Arsenal player, he really erupted, and it obviously has not gone his way lately for Manchester United. He's really an afterthought. Now, he did play okay this summer in the Copa America. He's 30 years old. He does have a lot of mileage on his tires, but you could say recently he doesn't necessarily because he hasn't been playing much. But in terms of best-case scenario or expectations for him at Inter, I mean, he's not going to be the player he was at Arsenal, where one season in league he had 24 goals and 10 assists. I mean, that's fantastic. And even for Barcelona, when he was much younger, he would put up some pretty damn good stat lines, just people wouldn't really realize them because of the obvious greats around him. So he's nowhere near that point in his career. And I definitely think because of his position, when you are a winger of sorts, when you're 30 years old, you have much less to offer. You do. In some positions like center back and striker, or even like a defensive midfielder, 30 years old is not that old. But with a winger, it's not great. So for Inter, I mean, I don't expect him to play all the time. That's for sure. I expect him to be a situational starter, maybe a substitute. But David, there probably could be plenty of games where maybe you don't even see him. It's really hard to know exactly what Antonio Conte will do with him. But Conte does have a little bit of knowledge of him. And yeah, I think he can have good games. And I think he'll have games where he's non-existent. And I just think he's another talented player Inter's adding to their squad. But obviously, if any Inter fan out there, and I doubt there are many Inter fans out there, hoping that this is Alexis Sanchez that you knew from Arsenal, it's not. It's absolutely not. But the most I can say in a positive way is it is a talented player. I mean, he has raw talent that you're adding to your squad. And at the end of the day, I think Antonio Conte is kind of a perfect manager to have a bunch of players who could be good one game and bad the next, because I think he really manages a squad really well. I think that's what Atsuri fans would know as well. He's really good at just kind of figuring out who will work for him, who won't. And speaking of who won't work for him, maybe he won't want Sanchez in the end, and Sanchez will get thrown at the end of the bench and not even make some squads. But I don't think it hurts. And he could have random games where it looks like the old Sanchez, but I wouldn't expect too much. So that's my take on it, David. What do you make of this deal?
So my first reaction is I wonder if this Lukaku-Sanchez deal was always going to happen and it was part of the negotiation for Lukaku. You guys know that's kind of how my mind works when I see teams making multiple deals or whatnot. You know, Inter paid quite a bit for Lukaku, though there was a lot of back and forth with Manchester United for that deal. We know Man United wanted to get rid of Sanchez, at least a good amount of his salary, get him off their books, get him off their squad. So my first reaction is I wonder if this was always going to happen. And, you know, they just wanted to spread out the announcements so Lukaku would get, you know, all the glory for a little while and people would look at the transfer fee for Lukaku in that vacuum. And then we have the Sanchez one. I'm with you. I mean, I don't know how much he has left. He's 30 years old. He has struggled, but he was really great at Udinese, playing in a very similar system to Conte. He often played as a second striker with Di Natale. So I guess in that sense, it could work. It's interesting Conte wanted both Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez when he was at Juve. Marotta finally gets him for him, but at Inter 5 years later. Who would have thought? So for me, from my perspective, low risk, high reward. Again, Man United's paying part of the salary. They get him on, it seems, on an essentially a free loan with an option to buy. So I really don't see much downside. I see Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez as clearly the starters, and Sanchez can kind of be the third wheel to rotate. So in a lot of ways, I like this deal for Inter. So Alex, as we mentioned, we have a couple more weeks of transfer window in Serie A. So let's get to some hot transfer topics. And which ones are we going to cover today?
All right, David, well, let's be topical as this has been officially announced. Any potential domino effects from Coutinho joining Bayern Munich?
Yeah, I mean, I see this tied to the Neymar deal and Dybala as well. So on one hand, Barcelona sheds the Coutinho salary, which is really significant. So that helps them. There was talk that Coutinho could be included with the deal for Neymar for PSG, with him going there. Him not being part of that deal, to me, makes Dybala even more of an interesting piece for PSG. So in my opinion, if Neymar goes to Barca, and there could be players other than Coutinho involved, so maybe if someone like Rakitic, I could see then the next logical step being PSG going all in for Neymar. So it definitely has a domino effect there. I also think it's interesting for Bayern that they're essentially repeating the James Rodriguez deal with Coutinho. So an interesting one. So my first reaction is like, maybe this makes Dybala to PSG one step closer.
Very interesting. All right, David, next hot transfer topic. Could Milik be swapped for Mauro Icardi?
You see, I think this would have made a lot of sense earlier in the summer. I was surprised this didn't come up more. And look, I'm a big Milik fan. I know he's getting a lot of people focus on his big misses, and he has. But he also scored 18 goals last season in Serie A with no penalty kicks. So he had a really good season overall. And to me, he made a lot of sense for Inter had they not signed Lukaku. Like, to me now, at this point, to me, it's Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez are the starters. I don't see Conte playing with three strikers. So I just don't think it makes much sense. I think Inter is, if they can move Icardi, it's going to be to make a plusvalenza. I know there's some Inter fans that looked at this Sanchez thing coming on loan saying, you know, if we sell Icardi, we'll have money to spend. I don't see it that way. I see Inter has already spent a lot this summer. To me, it's similar as Dybala. You make those sales to make a big capital gain. Icardi has even a much smaller amortized value compared to Dybala, who's 19 million. I think Icardi is just 2 million. So to me, if Inter sells Icardi, and I think Juve is still the most logical destination, it is to balance the book. So I think this swap Milik Icardi would have made sense about a month ago. I don't know if it makes sense now.
Okay. David, will Inter make any other moves in your opinion?
Yeah, I think they'll make at least one. Biraghi, the left wing back from Fiorentina, will likely arrive. This will allow Conte to use Asamoah in the midfield more. Again, I think Sanchez is going to be the striker, and I think that'll be the last striker. Is there a chance Inter try to sign another midfielder? Yes. Could it be Vidal? Potentially, but I'm not too sure. I have to look into this. The non-EU slots on Inter with Alexis Sanchez, Godin, and all that. I'm not that familiar with the passport situation, but I definitely expect Biraghi and Alexis Sanchez to come in, but not another big-name striker. I still don't see Dybala going to Inter. I could see Icardi at Juve, but if Dybala leaves Juve, I think it'll be to PSG.
Interesting. All right, David, this is a big, big topic. What's the latest on Irving Chucky Lozano?
Yeah, so there's a lot of reports that he's going to take the medical with Napoli on Wednesday, which is great. Di Marzio reported over the weekend that they are working through the final negotiations on the image rights and the salaries. So really nice move, man. It's going to be interesting on Thursday, Alex, when we do our power rankings going into the season with the recent moves, but Lozano coming to Napoli, if that deal goes through, and it looks like it will, they've had a really strong summer as well.
Yeah, definitely. That really will be a great get for Napoli. David, are Fiorentina any closer to signing Franck Ribéry?
Yeah, so another report from Di Marzio over the weekend. It seems like Ribéry is pretty open to the destination. But again, being open to the destination isn't the same to agreeing to terms. I think the financial side is going to be really important because both Spartak and Dynamo Moscow are hard after Ribéry. I would assume they can probably offer him more money than Fiorentina, although Fiorentina would offer him the potential to be in a better league. So let's see what happens, man. This would be a lot of fun to have Ribéry in Serie A. So I would say about 50-50, but I think the Russian angle shouldn't be ignored as well.
Yeah, I would love having Ribéry in Serie A. Just an interesting character and really one of the greats of this generation. Just doesn't get talked about a lot lately because obviously he's not the same Ribéry as he was before. All right, David, let's continue with our mid-table focus. How have Parma and Genoa done during the summer transfer window?
Yeah, so we're trying to do an overview of most teams going into the seasons. We've also covered a lot of this. If you're a patron on our Calcio Lamp page, there's been a lot of articles on those. Our friend Enrico Guardalina, Enrico Passarella, known as Guardalina, doing a great job there. So I'll give you a quick overview of Parma. So Parma last year got off to a great start of the season, then struggled a bit. They avoided relegation fairly comfortably, but they were kind of in the mix for that until the end of the season. So I think they did overall well after coming up from the second division. When you look at the squad, they really haven't lost anyone really too significant. The two players they did lose are Bastoni and Di Marco, who had arrived from Inter on loan, but there's talk that Bastoni could stay. They brought in, and they've developed a good relationship from Inter, they brought in Caramon, who was on loan at Bordeaux. I really like that front line. Inglese, who is that classic number nine who makes contributions even when he doesn't score, being flanked by Gervinho and Caramon with a lot of speed. That's a nice move there. They also signed right wing back Laurini from Fiorentina, who's fine. I think he's a average starter in Serie A for a team battling relegation. That's a good move. They've kept goalkeeper Sepe, midfielder Grassi, and Inglese, who are all owned by Napoli. They brought in Kuchka in January. So solid team for Parma, and they also are trying to sign Fabio Contrao or Laxalt from Milan. So solid summer for Parma. Genoa, we've talked quite a bit about. I've been very excited with what they've done. This summer, on paper, they look to me like one of the most improved teams in Serie A. They avoided relegation right on the razor's edge at the end of the season. They added Zapata from Milan. On the lower table team is an above-average center back. They brought back Barreca, who was a slightly above-average right wing back at Torino. He struggled abroad. In the midfield, they signed Schone and Saponara, two very good moves, especially Schone, who arrives from Ajax. They made a big plusvalenza on Romero, but get to keep him one season. They did up front, they did bring in striker Pinamonti, promising striker from Inter, but they could lose Kwame, who I like a lot, who's been linked to Sassuolo. So I really like what Genoa has done this summer. And of course, they signed Andrea Zoli, the manager from Empoli. So they should be a quite exciting team. So speaking of Tuscan clubs, Andrea Zoli left Empoli to go to Genoa. We are going to cover another big Tuscan club with our friend Giancarlo Rinaldi. We're going to take a deep dive on Fiorentina now.
So I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, our friend Giancarlo Rinaldi. He is the author of one of the best calcio books in English. A lot of you guys often ask me, is there some good calcio stuff in English? And Giancarlo wrote the book, 20 Great Italian Games, I Classici del Calcio. Really, really great stuff. He is also a writer on Football Italia, and he is a big Fiorentina fan. So we wanted to cover the Viola before the season starts. So Giancarlo, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back to Calcioland.
It's nice to be on. It's always nice to be asked.
Great. So let's start here, Giancarlo. Last time you were on was a difficult time for Fiorentina. It was right before the last game of the season where they were trying to avoid relegation. There was a lot of rumors that Rocco Commisso would take over from the Della Valle brothers. That finally happened. It's been an exciting time at Fiorentina. So give me your take on what you've seen in the Rocco Commisso era so far.
It's been no positive so far, really. I mean, it's difficult to. It would have been. I think anybody coming in was going to get a bit of a feel good because relations between the tifosi and the Della Valle brothers really had sunk to an all time low, and I think they were desperate for any kind of change, really. So he was going to get a positive bounce anyway. But I mean, he's talked good talk so far, and that's I guess over time the proof of the pudding will come in how much Fiorentina deliver and you know what he can do. But his hands are a little bit tied in terms of financial fair play. I think he said that you know he really needs to sell before they can buy, and they need to increase their revenue streams really before they can. They can afford to bring in big players and start to compete. But there's definitely, I mean, it's night and day. You know, you alluded to the last time we spoke, and it was very downbeat in Florence. Things were very low. Whereas now, everything feels quite positive at the club.
Yeah, I certainly agree there. So before we get to the players, I want to ask you about Montella, who stayed on. Commisso kept him. So I won. You know, there's a lot of takes on Montella out there. Fiorentina did avoid relegation right at the last game of the season. I think, though, it would have been very surprising at anyone, even like 3 or 4 months before, to think they'd be in that position. So Montella's back. And let me ask you, on a degree of 1 to 10, how comfortable are you with him still being at the helm?
I'd say I'm a solid 7 on Montella.
Okay.
I mean, he didn't do great at the end of last season. And his stock certainly fell after he left Fiorentina. Really, the last time. But when he was at Fiorentina previously, they played a lot of nice football and got some good results. So. You know, I still think that there's room there for improvement. And I honestly think any manager would have struggled towards the tail end of last season. It was a club that was in free fall. And I think there were so many factors there that almost any coach, there might have been some that could have done better probably, but I'm still willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I mean, there were a lot of names linked with the club in the summer. We saw Luciano Spalletti certainly was one that was quite persistently linked, and a good Tuscan at that. So you know that would have been quite exciting. But I think you know I get the feeling that Commisso come in and he's wanted to have a look around and he's wanted to see what, and I think that's quite a sensible approach rather than just coming in and changing for change's sake. So, you know, he's made changes behind the scenes. We've seen We've seen Pantaleo Corvino leave and mm-hmm. with Daniele Tradé back. So it'd be interesting to see what I'm willing to give Montella the benefit of the doubt based on what he did the first time around at Fiorentina and just how nice a team they were to watch and the results they achieved that time around.
Sure. Okay, so now let's talk, and I agree, everything has been positive. They've been able to keep all their best players, including Federico Chiesa, although, you know, between his body language and some reports, it might seem like, you know, maybe this wasn't exactly the ideal outcome for him. So tell me, are you concerned at all that there is the potential that Chiesa's maybe being kept against his will, or do you think something like that wouldn't affect him on the pitch?
I don't think so, just because of the kind of player that he is. I mean, it may be that, you know, like any young footballer's head would be turned by, you know, the names of the clubs that allegedly were interested in the sums of money that were being sort of touted for him. But I get the feeling he's the kind of player that once he goes out on the pitch, he gives 100% to every game, every time, and I don't think that's going to change. I don't think he'll feel. I mean, he may feel he missed out on the chance, but I don't think I'd be surprised anyway if he saw a different approach, because he's the kind of player that needs to play that way. I think at less than, you know, Chiesa kind of 90% is almost Chiesa 0%. You know, I think he has to give his all. He's a wholehearted, hard worker. He's got a great attitude, and I think he'll, if there is any residual kind of feelings, I think he'll get over them pretty quickly, and you'll see him deliver again, because it's in his interest. You know, if he does desperately want a big move, then, you know, he needs to keep playing well as well. So, and I think that also the, you know, he played well in a bad team towards the end of last season. I think they're kind of assembling a team that looks a lot better and a lot more positive. So I think he's got an opportunity to really have a breakthrough season in terms of goal scoring in Serie A, in terms of assists as well. So as I say, I don't envisage there being too many problems from that side of things for Fiorentina.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's always in his best interest to perform, you know, for his next move, whenever that may be, and even just because he takes pride as a professional. So let's talk about the new Fiorentina. So we've had Dragowski come in. We had Lirola and Boateng arrive from Sassuolo. We have Pulgar from Bologna, and we had the return of Milan Badelj after a year in exile in Italy's capital. Out of these, you know, and you can mention more than one, any that intrigue you in particular?
I think far and away the most intriguing one is Kevin Prince-Boateng. I think there's no doubt that was the signing that raised most eyebrows in Florence. Yeah. Definitely, you know, if you get him at the top of his game, that's going to be an outstanding signing. You know, it certainly attracted a lot of interest. So I'm intrigued even just to see really how they fit him into the team. I mean, he's been playing sort of as a kind of a false nine or something, been playing up front, and you know that could potentially, I don't know if that's long term the way he should be playing, but you know it's certainly exciting. So that's the most intriguing one. You know, to me that's the gamble, that's the throw of the dice. It could go great, it could be a disaster, but he's such a big character that it's going to be interesting to watch. I'd give an honourable mention as well to Paul Lirola. The reason I do that is because if you ask any Fiorentina fan what the team's been crying out for maybe for a decade, maybe not quite as long as that, but certainly since sort of the days of Manuel Pasquale, they've really been crying out for a good right back. it's a position that they've struggled in. They've had to shift Nikola Milenkovic out of his natural central defence, and he's so good that he played pretty well at right back. But I think Fiorentina fans, those that, you know, that study tactics a bit and study the balance of a team, will be delighted to see him come and actually have a balance to that defence. And, you know, when you look at it, it actually, if they can keep Biragi at left back,
yeah,
Milenkovic and Petzerla are a very strong central defensive pairing, to my mind,
yeah,
anyway. And Lirola completes a strong defence with, you know, Dragowski, who had a outstanding season with Empoli. So, you know, that back line looks, on paper anyway, one of the most solid that Fiorentina have had for a long time.
Yeah, well said on Lirola, and I agree that it's a nice that then it moves Milenkovic to the middle with Pizzella and Lafont. You know, I think what we saw from Dragowski at Empoli last season is definitely an upgrade. So let me ask you this, and you can take this in whichever angle you want. You can talk about maybe something you'd like for them to do on the transfer market, or a player you don't want them to lose no matter what, or just in general, an area of concern at Fiorentina. If there's one thing you could change on the squad right now, what would that be?
I would buy them a striker, I think, because I do worry a bit about the, having said that Boateng has been playing through the middle, I think, yep, there's some concern that, you know, that they would struggle to have an out and out goal scorer in that team. So you will get goals from Chiesa, you will get goals from Boateng, but I mean, I've seen them linked with the Rodrigo De Paul from Udinese. I think that would be quite a nice signing, although,
yeah,
you know, he could play maybe left side to Chiesa on the right, so that would be, but an out and out hitman. It's a shame really that Giovanni Simeone's stock seems to have fallen so low, because, you know, he was the man signed for that, and he had a good first season, but the second season was just so poor that that really set him back, and they could do with somebody just to come through the middle. And the other name that I've seen them linked with, which does get me excited, is Tonali from
yeah,
Sandro Tonali, and that would be obviously a great move for the future as well, you know. So that's something if you sort of put me on the spot and said what would be the biggest boost they could get, I think it would be an out and out hitman that would give you, you know, maybe 15 goals a season kind of guy. And then he would have, you know, because the midfield looks pretty solid behind him. Pulgar, who you mentioned, is a decent player,
yeah,
and then Milan Badeli has given a good shape to the team as well. So, you know, that would be a thing that I think, you know, an out and out hitman that could guarantee them goals would really give that Fiorentina team a bit of extra edge and the chance to shoot it. I think, you know, given how low they've sunk, it would be an amazing season if they were to even contend for European places this year.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that would be a great achievement. So fingers crossed.
So Giancarlo, an absolute pleasure to chat with you. So of course you guys enjoyed the terrific Scottish accent and the great insight, but I can assure you that when Giancarlo puts things down, writing are really great stuff. So the book 20 Great Italian Games, there are two volumes of this, great stuff if you want to get some culture history in English. And of course you can read Giancarlo on Football Italia. So thanks so much for joining me, my friend. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and I look forward to welcoming you back during the season.
I'd look forward to it. I should apologise for a brain freeze I had there, saying Manuel Pascual was a right back when he played a left back. So it's the ageing process makes me forget where players have played their positions. But it's still a truth that Fiorentina have struggled for a right back. But it's always a pleasure to talk to you, David.
All right. Great stuff. Good to hear always about Fiorentina. One of those clubs that I always forget about, and I feel bad that I forget about them because I really do kind of secretly root for them. But no, I do not have a Serie A club that I'm attached to yet. So, David, I am attached to something, and excuse the corny transition, but I'm attached to Twitter questions. So let's jump right into them. The first Twitter question I have for you is, what do you make of a front line of Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, and Alexis Sanchez, and will Inter sign another striker?
So as I mentioned earlier, I don't think they'll sign another striker. But look, you know, you look at the landscape of the strikers in Serie A. I mean, this front line is right up there with the best. I mean, we need to see if Juve is going to sign Icardi. Obviously, you have Ronaldo, Icardi, Douglas Costa. That's tough to beat. Milan, we don't know who Piontek's, partner. I mean, we know it might be Sousa. We could be Leao. They might sign Correa as well. Lazio, we have the other Correa, who I really like, who I could see as a breakout player. And Immobile, that's a nice attack. We need to see Napoli with Lozano, who's expected to arrive with Milik. But Inter's right there, for me, in my opinion, as one of the very best. We've both talked about how we expect Lukaku to do well in Serie A. We know he has a reputation for scoring mainly about the lower table teams, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Inter squandered a lot of points there. I expect a huge season from Lautaro Martinez, did well in the Copa America. And Sanchez, again, a low risk, high reward. So I think Inter right there is in the conversation for having one of the best attacks, if not the best attack in Serie A. So I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, and if Lautaro Martinez pops off and becomes what he could become, they could be really fun to watch. David, next Twitter question. Who will score more goals for Juventus this season between Paulo Dybala and Gonzalo Higuain?
Oof, it's a tough question, man. And the reader said, assuming they both stay, which, you know, I think is unrealistic. But let's say assume they both stay. I think that obviously means Icardi wouldn't be coming to Juve. I think Dybala then just goes in the false nine role and plays the Mertens role from Napoli. And I think he'd do quite well. So I'm going to pick Dybala. I'm not that high on Higuain even playing for Sarri. Now, you know, is it possible Dybala sold and Higuain stays? Gun to the head, I actually think that's going to be the outcome. Then at that point, Higuain would score more for Juve.
Quite a goal from Paulo Dybala at the weekend. Really was. All right, David, over-under time on Piontek scoring 15 goals in Serie A this season.
So I did a bunch of polls on our Calcioland account over under for strikers. And Alex, get ready, because on Thursday I'm going to ask you on every single one of those. So that this question from the listener inspired me. So he put 15. I always like to do the half gimmick, because that way you can't just do the cop-out answer and say, I think he'll score 15. I think 15 is an easy, you know, look, Piontek has struggled this summer. Milan's kind of trying to reinvent their attack. They Leao just arrived. Sousa's been tried in the trequartista role, but Paqueta played in the Copa America, so he wasn't there. I'm still taking comfortably the over for Piontek, over 15 goals. Now, is he going to match last season's goal total? That remains to be seen, but I think 15, yeah, I'm going to take that. What about you, Alex? You taking over 15 for him?
I am. I just see no reason not to take over, since he's a good young striker. He'll be even more comfortable at Milan having the off season and not switching teams midseason. So I just really see no reason not to take over 15, but who knows? All right, David, next Twitter question. Could you see Roma signing a replacement for Patrick Schick should he be sold before the window closes? And is Petagna too similar to Edin Dzeko?
So Dzeko's thing, look, I think Schick was going to leave regardless because Roma invested a lot in. He's another of the disastrous Monchi acquisitions that they're probably going to have to loan out to try get him going. There's been talk of Borussia Dortmund going there. So, yeah, I mean, Roma is pretty thin up front. I like Petagna quite a bit. I don't know if it's necessarily a bad thing if you have the backup who's very similar to the starter. I think Petagna would be intriguing because he could be Dzeko's long-term replacement. I mean, Dzeko is 33. Petagna had a very good season. He scored over 15 goals, if I remember correctly. So I like him. I think it would make sense. The other name that's been mentioned is your boy Batshuayi at Chelsea. So that could be a possibility. I mean, what do you think of Batshuayi? Do you think it's almost certain he'll be loaned out before the window closes?
This one's harder to tell. With someone like Bakayoko and Zappacosta, I think it's pretty easy. The writing's on the wall. They're going to leave before September 2nd. With Batshuayi, it's harder to tell. Frank Lampard said, well, he gave a very professional answer on Friday. He said he's our player, which is really more factual. He did make it sound, though, like there's a better chance of Batshuayi staying than Zappacosta or Bakayoko. And right now, Chelsea's striker situation is not necessarily cemented. You have Giroud, who's just, you know, he's a good serviceable striker, but he's old and he's not ever going to be a star or someone you can even play for a full 90. And then you have Tammy Abraham on the complete other end of things, young but very unproven. So maybe Lampard wants to keep Batshuayi for insurance, but Batshuayi is just a really tough one to figure out, David. In fact, I know that he's not necessarily a manager's dream. I know Antonio Conte had issues with Batshuayi just in terms of getting him to work hard and train hard and show up for training on time. So I can't figure out if Batshuayi is not playing right now for Chelsea because of that, if Lampard doesn't rate him at the top, or if Lampard just knows, he's not in my plans and I am going to loan him out. So really, that was a long-winded way of saying I have no damn clue what will happen with Michy Batshuayi. So that's what I got for you. But all right, let's move on. Maybe that will develop by the next time we do a podcast. So, David, next Twitter question. Do you think Roma will be able to sign Itso or Nkulu from Torino?
I don't think so. I think Torino at this point is going to keep both. I think Torino really wanted to keep the band together. Itso signed an extension and Nkulu. I guess there's a slight chance for him, but I still think Rugani and Lovren, I know the deal kind of fell apart over the weekend, but I still think there's a chance Lovren gets resuscitated. I think him or Rugani are much more likely than the two Torino guys.
Okay. David, how about this? Do you think PSG will make another attempt at signing Donnarumma?
I do. I mean, we talked about it with Jonathan Johnston last week. I think PSG are still interested in signing a keeper. I think Milan still has to make one plus Valenza capital gain before the summer window closes. I could see Sousa. I know Donnarumma wants to stay, and I hope it's Sousa between the two that is gone and Correa comes in. But I think Donnarumma is going to ultimately stay at Milan and then sign an extension. But the question is, will PSG make another attempt? And I think they definitely will.
Yeah, can never count PSG out until the window is really, really over. David, how has Serie A done with their branding efforts this summer?
So it's a good question. I think the summer friendlies, you know, we had Inter and Juve in Asia. We had Milan, Fiorentina, and Napoli here in the United States. I think those went well. I think Rocco Commisso has done well promoting Fiorentina, his connection to New York and whatnot. Here in the U.S., you know, the coverage on ESPN is still going to be great. Our friend Matteo Bonetti is now there full time. I think they've done pretty well. I think last season in some ways was disappointing for Serie A because we had a lot of positive momentum. We had Roma making the semifinals in the CL. We had VAR the first season. We had Ronaldo coming. But I think we took a lot of step backs last season. So I'm curious to see how we do this season. You know, I'm going to do a column looking at all the players that arrived in Serie A and those who left. Overall, I'd say the talent level has improved. Has the league done a great job branding itself and promoting it? Not so much on social media, but I think the teams themselves overall have done well. Like Milan launched their app over the weekend. So I think the teams have done well. The league as a whole, not so much.
All right, fair enough. David, Lazzari recently suffered a hand injury. Do you feel there have been more injuries than usual this summer?
So very disappointing on Lazzari, a player we've been talking about on the podcast for 2 years now, makes it to Lazio. We think this is a superb fit, and it still will be. Look, he fractured his hand. Not a huge deal, but he will miss the first match against Sampdoria. I can't say if this summer feels like more injuries than not. I mean, keep in mind, we had the Copa America. We had the under 21 Euro. I got to say, overall, I feel like there weren't too many. That's my vibe on that.
Okay. All right, David, let's move away from football for this question. Name your three favorite Tarantino characters.
Really tough question. I spent a lot of time yesterday thinking about it. Tarantino is definitely my favorite director. I've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood now 4 times in the theaters. I could literally just live in that movie and be very happy. So I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, but I am definitely going to include in this list Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth, as one of my three favorite Tarantino characters ever. I mean, this is just a complete movie star performance by Brad Pitt. Just a great character. Like, it's really interesting because he's really not a great guy. If you really think about it, it's implied that he killed his wife, and I definitely think he did. He's definitely someone not afraid to get into fights, beats up people at every chance that he gets, but he's so damn charming and such a good friend to Leo that you, to Leo DiCaprio's character, that you forget all that. Just a superb character overall. So I'm definitely putting him in my top three. And I'm trying not to be a prisoner at the moment, but I've seen this movie so many times that I feel confident that I am putting him in that top three. Then it really gets dicey. I have to put Christopher Waltz's character in Inglourious Basterds. Hans Landa, just an incredible villain. I mean, I had never really heard of Christopher Waltz until I saw Inglourious Basterds, and he's just an incredible character, speaks in so many different languages, even the Italian is great, the German, the French, the English, just a superb character, so he belongs there. And then the third one, it gets tough because I you know, guys know I love Reservoir Dogs. That movie made me want to be a writer. I think Steve Buscemi's character, Mr. Pink, you could pick Mr. Blonde as well. But I'd be remiss not to pick Samuel Jackson's character in Pulp Fiction, Jules. Unbelievable character. And I think, you know, Samuel Jackson, if you think of like the best actor in Tarantino movies, he probably would have to be the pick. Although I got to say, Brad Pitt in his two roles is really making a strong push for that. So gun to the head, I'm going to take Cliff Booth, Hans Landa, and Jules from Pulp Fiction. So thanks for the question. You made me spend a lot of time thinking about Tarantino, which isn't a bad thing. So now let's get to our patron questions. If you enjoy Calcioland, consider become a patron. You get an extra 2 hours or so a month of podcast because our patron sections can go 15 to 20 minutes. You also get 2 articles a week. I usually write at least one, sometimes two. We have Enrico Passarella and sometimes guest writers covering a lot of things. If you enjoy reading more on the mid-lower table stuff, we have a lot of content there. And we also donate your first pledge to charity to our friends, the Insuperabili. We'll be able to make a nice donation for August as well. So you can try it out risk-free. Worst case scenario, we'll donate your money to charity and then you can cancel.
So I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, great friend of the show, Richard Hall. You guys know him as the chief correspondent for Football Italia, the creator of one of my favorite sites, Gentleman Ultra. So Richard, always a real pleasure to chat with you on Calcioland. Bentornato.
Cheers, David. It's always good to be back on here. Thank you for having me.
Great. So, Richard, people that have been listening to our podcast for a long time know that usually we cover the Milanese clubs with you, and we'll definitely get to Milan and Inter with a week before the season starts. But I want to ask you about two other subjects that are big on Serie A and hit close to home to you. You recently interviewed Rocco Commisso for Football Italia. What's your impression of Fiorentina's new owner, and what was the interview like?
It was a great interview. Rocco Commisso was just so open, and it was refreshing. Refreshing to have someone talk quite passionately, not just about Fiorentina and Florence, but also about New York and about football and business. And you know, the interesting thing for me is that for him, his message was clear. Often, when you see takeovers or owners coming in, you know, there's almost like hidden agendas, or they don't, it's almost like, it's like when you see a footballer and they're just media trained when they talk, and you just think, I've heard this from 1,000 different people. He was just very open, and, you know, he was quite honest in the sense of he's saying he's 69 years old. You know, this project isn't going to be one that's going to be able to take 5, 10, 15 years, you know, to come to fruition. But at the same point, he does need initially some time. And he's very clued up on the way that, for me, it's exciting because sometimes we can see the way Italian clubs run as being quite archaic. And he was ready to take on Italian bureaucracy. He understood it. He understands Florence. He understands the people. And, you know, he's wanting to create a new training ground, have everybody, the women's team, the men's team, the youth teams, all playing in the same place to have an identity. You know, he understands that the merchandise, the way it's, isn't done in the right way. It's not sold in the right way. And he understands branding. And he knows that, you know, to make money, there's going to have to be an investment in there from him. But he was very clear that he doesn't want to go and spend a couple of hundred million on players. It's more about investing in the brand, getting it out there, and making money. And I think that the fact that Charlie Stilettano had offered him to go to the International Champions Cup and to get Fiorentina you know, out into the States would meant a great deal to him. And it was nice to hear. So, no, fantastic guy. And for me, I think the future is going to be really bright for Fiorentina under him.
Excellent. Yeah, so a lot of Fiorentina today. We interviewed your colleague Giancarlo Rinaldi. So good to hear more on Commisso. So before we get to the Milanese club, one more thing on Mario Balotelli. So we're recording this on Sunday. Everything points to Balotelli officially joining Brescia. So I'll leave it very open-ended. What's your reaction to Balotelli signing with Brescia?
First and foremost, I'm excited. But the one thing was, I have to be honest, when I heard the rumors originally that it was a deal that he may go to Flamengo, team up with the Gabriel Barbosa, that was just brilliant. That's stuff that you just can't make up. It would have been just absolutely fantastic to see what happened with that. But, you know, this was the second most fun thing, you know, Balotelli sort of going home. I think it's great for him to be back in Serie A. One of my favourite times, you know, I follow French football and do a little bit of work with French football as well. And one of my favourite experiences was watching Balotelli in Nice. For me, it was one of the perfect moves. Because at the time, you know, he's out of the spotlight, big fish in a small pond. It worked well. You know, he still had the ability, still can play, and it seemed to settle him. You know, I think probably moving to Marseille after that, which is much more of a powder keg. You know, it's much more of a, you know, I'd compare them to sort of like Roma in the way that they look at football. It's mental. It's crazy, and I think probably wasn't the right space for him. I think going back to Brescia, I think it's the right project. I think, you know, it'd be interesting to see him play with the players like Sandro Tornelli, who everyone's eager to see in Serie A. And I'm hoping that what this can do for him is he can perform on a level where he's going to get game times. And I want him to just be able to have fun, because when he has fun, he's good. So, you know, he's taken if you look at the reported wages between what Flamengo were going to offer and what Brescia were offering, it's a huge difference. So I'm hoping he's going here for the right reasons. And I'm excited to see him back in Serie A.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. So now let's get to the Milanese, and let's start with Milan. So Gianpaolo replaced Gattuso. A lot has been talked about this summer on the big change there. So the season's about to start. At the end of the day, how much of an impact do you think Gianpaolo is going to have at Milan?
I think it's an interesting one. Milan is a club with, you know, everything that's gone on recently when even Gazidis came out and made the statement, listen, you've got to temper, you know, what you're thinking about Milan. You can't expect them to be European champions next year. It's got to be a bit, you know, we're in a situation financially where we've got to be careful. And so just lower your expectations. And I thought the message was quite good because, you know, Marco Giampaolo, I like him. I think that that sort of 4-3-1-2 system he plays all operates around, you know, really intelligent movement, keeping possession. And I think, you know, what we saw, what he did at Samp, he was really quite entertaining. For him, it's a big move. He's, you know, they've not gone for a coach now who is looking at Milan and thinking, oh, you know, we've got no money to spend, really, we can't push it. And it's sort of, we'll get frustrated. This is a guy, this is sort of his Eden at the moment. It's brilliant for him. And I think that he won't mind having to maybe coach some of these players. And that's the key point, because he will. This is a coach's job this time, not you know, someone like potentially Ancelotti, for instance, who, you know, this is a guy who wants to come in and really work with these guys. And if he can give them an identity, a style of play, you know, Milan, I think, over the next couple of years could get into a really good place. They're not going to, you know, despite what Elliott management want to do right at this moment in time, they're not going to be back on top straight away. It's going to be a painful process. But I like what they've done. And I think that this season is, I know that people talk about the horrible word transition. It is a development stage for them. But I don't see why Milan won't end the season being quite proud of a very capable team by the end of it.
Okay, so now let's talk. I know, you know, the summer friendlies, it's easy to overreact with them, but it is fair to say Milan has struggled to score goals. And to their, you know, they also made some new additions that haven't had a chance to play yet. But I want to ask you, should Milan fans be concerned about this based on what we saw this summer?
No, I don't think so, because I'm not one for worrying too much about preseason friendlies, because, you know, you look at these, it's always difficult. You know, when you come up against certain teams, you know, Serie A hasn't started yet. You know, we're looking at the fact of the Premier League, for instance, has already started. You know, we're well into there now. And, you know, you can't look at the game, I know they only decided on penalties, but you can't compare the fitness levels when they played, say, Manchester United, for instance. I know that when they're getting closer to it and they play Cesena, you would be hoping that there would be more goals in that game. And I know that Gazzetta dello Sport sort of was worrying about Piontek and the lack of goals this morning. But for me, I mean, use the example, I've used French football once today, I'll use it again. Look at Nice in France. So just Nice lost 6-0 to Burnley, 8-0 I think it was to Wolfsburg, 14 goals in two games. They've come out and won their first two games. You know, pre-season friendlies, a lot of the time for me, it's about fitness. Teams are at different levels. So I wouldn't be worried at all about that. And I think that, you know, when you look as for goals, not only with Piontek up there, who I think will score. I don't think he's a one-season wonder by any means. I think he's a fantastic talent as well. But also as well, I quite like the look of Rafael Leao, the Portuguese striker from Lille. I probably wouldn't be expecting too much from him too early. You know, he's realistically got all the characteristics of a winger rather than a centre forward. But, you know, he also, for me, he plays a very similar game to Piontek when he's in the box. So I think the next season, I think Leo will definitely stay on the bench at the start. Again, I think he'll develop under Giampaolo. And, you know, that's why I'm not too worried, because I think that if Piontek does have a dry spell, they've got someone there who they won't have to alter how they play too much to fit him in.
Okay, so let's before we move on to Inter, I'm going to ask you simply, I think Juve, Napoli, Inter are a tier above, so I feel in a lot of ways, and look, a lot can change. The first three spots in the Champions League have some favorites, but where do you rank Milan with the best of the rest? So say with Atalanta, Lazio, and Roma.
I think the start, the first three games and then the derby could help them. I think it's off the top of my head something, I don't know, not in this order, but it's, you know, Udinese, Hellas and Brescia, I think, before the derby for Milan or something like that. So they have got a chance to really hit the ground running. And I think that's the key. You know, for me, I'll be really focusing on Milan in the first game because if they can get a win under the belt, confidence is there. I think they can. I don't see any reason why they can't be up with the likes of Roma. He's still really, for me, still got business to do in the window yet. Lazio, I expect to do exactly the same, pretty much as last season. Depends as well, you know, on who they can keep before the end of the window. And Atalanta, you know, they've got the Champions League, so it depends how that affects them as well. So Milan have got a good chance for me. I think that, you know, if they, again, it's all down to the start because I think there will be, as I said before, a work in progress. And, you know, you look at the likes of Lazio, you look at the likes of especially Roma, and there's no guarantees with those guys either. So, yeah, it's good. And, you know, you're looking at especially Roma, new coach as well. So, yeah, they've got a good chance.
Okay, let's move to Inter and let's start with Lukaku, the most expensive purchase in Inter's history, the most expensive player to move from the Premier League to Serie A. So in your opinion, how much of an impact can Inter fans expect from Lukaku this season?
I think it's an interesting one because I think with Antonio Conte coming in, being so adamant that, you know, everyone from the Primavera to first team plays that new formation, a new system, you know, his first training session when he said that he only asked for two things, respect and hard work. You've seen the likes of, obviously, they're still trying to get rid of Mauro Icardi and Perisic. He's now gone to Bayern. João Mario still needs to go. But he's obviously finding players who he believes has the right mentality and right attitude. For me, I think it's the fact of Lukaku in this system. I think can work really well. You know, he's not going to be playing up on his own. I'm hoping that, you know, the likes of some of the acquisitions as well will help with his supply. I think with the intensity that Conte plays with may, and I'm thinking potentially will show that Lukaku will be more the Lukaku we see when he plays for Belgium, rather than he was, you know, the other couple of seasons at Manchester United, because it is down to supply with him. I also think the league in itself, you know, he's got that physicality to really bully defenders as well. And if he is playing with that target man, I think one of the best things about Lukaku, I'm not going to just rate him on his goals. I think how he can play alongside Lautaro Martinez, that's the key for me. I think it's going to be really interesting. You know, different types of players, but I think they've got really some strengths that will really complement each other. So, yeah, I'm really hopeful for that. I think that, you know, the biggest thing for me is that Antonio Conte's wanted this guy for a long, long time. There's reasons for it. You know, he thinks he's that perfect guy for his system, so I'm not going to argue with Conte.
You know, a lot was made on Inter not getting Dzeko, but to me, once they had Lukaku with Lautaro Martinez, you have a very nice foundation there. So you briefly talked about that. Anything else you want to say about this potential partnership? Because to me, when I look at their skill sets, they really look like perfect partners for one another.
They do, because, I mean, Lukaku, in some respects, you know, he's got two, for me, he's got two really good qualities. Once if he's on the ball and he's got field to run in, I mean, you know, you don't even want to try and stop him. You know, so I think he's perfect if Inter are going to have to play at some points on the counter. We've seen that with Lautaro Martinez as well. He's so quick. I think with as well, you know, you can use Lukaku as the target man. And for Lautaro to play in and around him, you know, play off him, I think that's why he will get a lot of goals. I mean, we've all seen the rumours today that, you know, it's looking like Alexis Sanchez potentially is going to go on that crazy loan deal, where I don't understand why, how Inter managed that. But, you know, again, there's, I think him, in a sense, he's almost quite an interesting player because, you know, he's more, for me, the Martinez-type player in the way he can operate. It reminds me more of Martinez when Sanchez was Udinese in some respects. But, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think there will be goals in there. And for me, I think that the likes of Lautaro will really benefit. And, again, you know, what's interesting is that Lukaku still feels like he's been around for ages, but he's still relatively young. I think he can really develop, and I think that partnership will really come on this season.
So let's talk a little bit about the midfield for Inter. We had Barella arrive from Cagliari for a big transfer, and Sensi, who has been the protagonist of many articles this summer on how brilliant he's been, and he certainly has this preseason. So tell me a little bit
about the two new additions to the midfield. Do you think even if Inter went in with these two and Brozovic, would you feel pretty confident that's enough for what the team needs?
Yeah, again, I mean, like, it has been pre-season, and so we can't take too much out of it, but Sensi in particular has been incredible. What I've liked with this, with Sensi especially, and is that link-up with Brozovic, where it's actually, I was surprised to see Brozovic playing a little bit deeper and Sensi being more of the creative one. I mean, you know, his range of passing is phenomenal. I think it's a great deal for what Inter have got him for. And I think for a long, long time, one of the biggest headaches since the treble has been, you know, very static, very, very static midfield, very, very difficult to create chances. They've tried numerous different trequartistas when they're in systems with under Mancini and Spalletti and everyone else. You know, when we tried the likes of Gianmario and Benega, there's been so many and it's not worked. And the wide play, you know, has never done enough. It's almost been a running joke among Inter fans of the inability for them to find the pullback and cross the ball. I think now with the system again that Conte wants to play, it gives different avenues. Obviously, they'll have the wing back stroke wingers getting forward. There's now two up front to look for, and that midfield then becomes really crucial. And when you've got the likes of Brozovic, he can do a bit of everything, offensively, defensively, range of passing. You know, he can even chip in with the odd goal. And then you're looking at Sensi, who really has got a lot of those same characteristics, same as Barella. So what all of a sudden you're finding is this three, if they play, can be almost interchangeable. So I'm hoping it's going to be a lot more fluid. And, you know, as much as I don't want to talk about Mauro Icardi too much, but you've got to give him so much credit for the amount of goals he's scored with no creativity. You know, I think that this Conte team will play more as a unit. Everyone will know their roles. Everyone will know what they've got to do. And so I'm quite excited for that midfield three. And there are other options as well on the bench. So yeah, it could be quite an exciting season, I think, for Inter.
Okay, so let me ask you about Conte. On his introductory press conference, said that Inter's goal this season is to bridge the gap with Juve and Napoli. In your opinion, where do you rank Inter compared to those two teams?
Do you know what? That's such a difficult question for the basis of it just doesn't revolve just around Inter. You know, look, yeah. I take it from an Inter perspective that Conte has the blueprint and Beppe Marotta does. You know, they designed a fantastic sports car and, you know, now they just move companies and they're going to do it again. They've got nearing enough, probably. He might not hit the ground running. It might not happen as quickly as it did at Juventus, but Conte has this idea very clear, knows what he wants to do, and he's a proven winner. So he already, you know, you can see the fact that there's no mercy with the likes. We've talked about Icardi, Gianmario, Perisic, yeah, etc. You know, he knows he's getting the players in he wants. Every single box is getting ticked. So it looks like, and it should be, that Inter will be able to really make a better go of it than it did last season and actually challenge, at least for some part, but a title. But, and this is the big but, Napoli, I'm going to just park to one side at the moment because I think Napoli will have a good season, improve and be in that mix. But it all depends on Juventus because for me, nobody knows what's going to happen with Juventus. I've been really interested to watch the development. I understand why it's happening. I understand, you know, everyone's talked about why they changed the kit to the American market, why they changed the badge, yeah, and the branding. And it's looking like they're going to go forward to take themselves to the next level. Now it's not just about winning, you know, that isn't the most important thing or the only thing, as it said. Now they've got to do it in style. So it's about, you know, and they've gone completely off-piste with the coach, you know. Now Sarri, I mean, he's probably the most un-Juventus coach for many a year. So this Juventus project, you know, this is either going to be mind-blowingly good or Inter have got a chance. So for me, you know, if everything falls into gear with Juventus, forget about it because it will just go. It won't even be a freight train as it used to be. You know, it'll be like a luxury freight train. It'd just be amazing. It's just, I don't know how to describe it, but you know, if the wheels fall off early in the first, you know, opening weeks, and there's some big defeats, and you know, the crowd or they turn on Sarri, that could get messy. So for me, look, I think Inter, and Napoli have both smelt potential blood here and have strengthened themselves nearly, not yet, especially if that Milik-Icardi switch happens that's been rumoured. You know, they could really look at this and think, you know what, this is the best chance we've had in many, many, many years. But again, you know, like I said, it's all on Juventus.
Excellent point to close. So, Richard, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. Richard is the chief correspondent on Football Italia. I look forward to reading all his great articles there. You can also hear him on SiriusXM here in the United States. Richard, really a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, David. Always a pleasure to be on here. Thank you so much.